Trolley car! Woo-woo! DUIs! Connected? Yeah, by Seattle Spirit.
Get the best weed.
Call 911 and the police.
I assume it was not called John.
Amazon is ISIS.
Say exactly what you think.
No hands up! No hands up!
As a city, we have no plan.
Well, it's not true. You have a plan to turn us on to drug dealers and force us to purchase heroin for people. So, I mean, don't cut yourself short, Michael Bryan. Sally Bagshaw already announced she wants to do the test. Why are you selling yourself short? That's such a sad story, but it is relatable to what we need to do in our area. Here's my my conviction, okay? Here's my thesis. The professional Republicans in our state, most of them are not activists, okay? Most of them are, in fact, professional Republicans. And here's what this means. You go to them and you say, what do you do for a living? Oh, I get Republicans elected. Okay, all right. Conservatives, good conservative Republicans? Well, Republicans. What if they get into their job and they absolutely refuse to uphold any rule of law or any principles? Well, if they got an R by their name, I'm cool with that. Okay, so you basically, you Republican. Yes, I'm Republican. That's what I do for a living. I'm Republican. So the professional Republicans in our area are not activists. Now, some are. I can think of 25, 30 people who are hardcore activists. They just happen to try to work within the system, and God bless them for doing it, because it's hard work. It's double duty, because you're trying to change the party, and you're trying to get people elected. It's really hard work, and there's people who do that. So the need is for us to be activists. I've tried many times to get people to go to protests, etc. It's just not, it's not in the conservative mindset. So I'm trying a different approach, a lighter approach, an easier approach, and a brutal approach. You hear about this family of a couple that they were killed in 2013 in a DUI crash. Okay, we talked about this earlier. They have been given a $13 million settlement, but why? Because this guy had been pulled over, had been charged with DUI, I think it's five previous times. Was that the number, Heroin Dan? Was it five times?
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
Well, so you don't want to say if it was five times, but I think it was five times. And as a matter of fact, the trend on DUIs in our area...
Since the year 2011 in Washington, DUI arrests have dropped by about a third, with officers arresting nearly 11,000 fewer drunk drivers per year than 6 years ago. In that same time period, DUI fatalities rose to a peak of 258 people killed in 2015, the latest stats available.
That's interesting. Heroin Dan, what's that thing you like to say again?
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
And Sideshow Bob, is there something you throw around from time to time when you're not busy suing people? Is there something that you like to say, Bob?
The law matters.
Yeah, right. Okay, so... In terms of activism, in stories like this, everywhere we see them online, guys, this couldn't be easier. This could not be easier. Simply post next to stories when people are on social media. You just take this quote from Heroin Dan.
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
And you put it in there and you link to Dan's TEDx speech. Now, look, if you guys will do this, I promise you, I'll build a digital activism kit, okay? It's not going to be fancy because I don't have time to make it fancy, but I'll make it doable. I'll be able to send you a link to that and do these videos, and we'll make them short and brief, and you'll be able to post them to get people thinking in our area about things like that. Now, here's another thing that we're going to do, that we need to do to help. If you want to view it as helping the party, great. That's fine. It can be helping the party. My thesis is most of the people in the Republican Party, the professional Republicans, aren't activists. They don't get activism. They get election turnout. They get modeling. They get persuasion. They get winning elections. A lot of them are super skilled, wonderful professionals, and they work really, really hard and damn long hours, too. So I'm not here with a broad brush decrying people who work in politics. Please don't misunderstand. I'm talking about a consultant class, and I'm talking about some very specific and very powerful people who shouldn't have the power they have because they are far from activists and they're far from engaging in activism. And they're perfectly happy with whatever the R does as long as it's done in the name of an R. Okay? So Joel Moreno from Como News talked with John Lombardi. He's a supporter of this ridiculous LEAD program. This is, and Tara Moss, one of the people who's bringing it to Seattle, LEAD. This is one of the ways that they are going through diversionary tactics. If you're a young person, you're new to crime, you made a mistake, you made a bad decision, I want you to be given a diversionary program. I want you to not go to jail the first time unless it's murder or something very serious, an assault, you harmed somebody, you need to do some jail time. In jail and after jail, I want to see you in diversion programs. If you're hardened and you're a criminal, I do not believe these LEAD programs work. The data shows they don't. Safe Seattle on Facebook has broken this data out. We've had Harley Lever on to explain the data in detail.
People live in cars that are then parking on residential streets are a major problem.
John Lombard has tracked the troubles as a member of the D5 Community Network and says the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program could make a real difference.
We definitely support that approach.
In its North Precinct rollout, LEAD would focus on helping people living in vehicles who are committing low-level crimes like drug use or prostitution.
I see LEAD as a win-win for everyone.
Council members got an update on the expansion efforts. Instead of hauling these offenders to jail, police would have the option to do a face-to-face warm handoff to a LEAD caseworker who could offer help with addiction, housing, even mental health.
Okay, that works all well and good unless there's no stick attached to it, unless there's no threat. If there's no threat, the warm handshake, great, give me a sandwich. The warm handshake, yeah, you know, I could use some money. The warm handshake, yeah, I'll take your socks and I'll take the clothes you're going to give me. You bet I'll take that stuff. That's how this stuff is ending up now, because there is no counter to it. So the LEAD program, maybe it will work with the people living in cars, but it won't work if there's not a less desirable alternative that they could be forced to face. And right now, there is no stomach for that amongst the agitators and the incompetents who make up the Seattle City Council. So it has to have that harder edge. Or it fails. So here's what I want us to do. In cases where they are clearly favoring the people living in the RVs and the cars, I want us to do something very simple. Put up a sign next to them saying, no property tax. Very simple. No property tax. No parking fees. No property tax. And just remind people who come by that, yeah, that's right, they don't pay property tax. Oh, that's right, they don't pay parking fees. It's getting into the head of people in this area to continue to try to animate them to punch holes in the walls of stupid. Speaking of that, to the text lines we go. Not that your texts aren't stupid. They are stupid. They're not. 4958. Hey, Todd, remember when Starbucks released those stainless steel straws? Or did someone, or were they afraid of the liability of people jamming them into their flesh? They had to recall. Who are the wizards that came up with that? Are you kidding me? Yeah, I do remember that. Are the syringes plastic? Nix the needle? Yeah. Yeah, I'm asking you, go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/Todd Herman Show. Look at the video I put up there of me using a syringe as a drinking straw. I want us to do this on video and film it. You can get these at pharmacies. If not, go get them at the needle exchanges. They give them away for free. Make sure you're careful. Make sure you are really careful when you separate the sharp part of that, and be smart. Get rid of it in the right way. Text line 6637. Even though your listeners are smarter than your average Seattle street person, maybe better emphasize that they should not have any hypodermic needles attached to the syringes. I'm emphasizing that now and have emphasized it in the video. And thanks to Tom for putting up a decent version of the video that was not shot on a 1952 beta version of what a camera could look like in a video era. All right, we'll continue on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM, with all the news that's fit to have sex with someone to get. What? Yeah, I'll explain. I will. music by request on Fridays in the Todd Herman Show. Got something that you need to hear. Only a few more chances. Head over to Twitter at Toddy Herman. Or text line 800-465-8770. Brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. You've heard of this Allie Watkins woman. She worked at the New York Times. She worked at McClatchy, HuffPost, BuzzFeed, Politico. You heard she had an adulterous affair, of course, with James. Or was it adulterous? I don't know. But it was a weird affair. He's 58. She's 26. Well, that's D.C., to be frank. That's not particularly weird in D.C. I guess what they want you to believe is extraordinary. Is that she was having an affair with a guy who worked in national security while she was covering national security. Wolf has been charged with, he was a senior staffer at the Senate Intelligence Committee. He's been charged with improperly leaking. That sounds terrible, given their relationship. Improperly leaking. Now, he's been charged with untimely release. Sorry. I have to rethink this whole thing now. He's been charged with giving her information that was secret. That he should, well, he's been charged with national security-related affairs. Sorry. So he is one guy she was sleeping with, according to who? The New York Times, who's now turned to investigate their own reporter. They found out, they believe, that she'd had a second affair with a second person who oddly also worked in national security. So I wonder if that person was also prematurely leaking information to Miss Watkins. More to this, I love this statement. Avoiding conflict of interest is a basic tenet of journalism, and intimate involvement with the source is considered verboten, the Times reported. Now, intimate, that's an interesting word. I could see that you're not supposed to sleep with sources or have sex with sources. Intimate, that's not verboten. Intimate relationships, that's DC. Sorry, it is. I have a friend of mine, Douglas High. Hey, you see him, Doug Hay. You see him from time to time on CNN. I haven't talked to him in years, but he's a very nice guy. And he worked at the RNC when I was there. He was a comms director. I once posted a really nasty and really angry tweet about some journalists who took their picture in Valerie Jarrett's office. They were there partying it up and drinking it up and having the champagne in the White House at one of Barack Obama's parties you paid for. And I said, how on earth can you cover a source when you party with the source? And Doug said to me, man, this angry tweet. Why are you so angry? And I said, because you can't. Look, there's a reason. There are some Republicans in this state I deeply admire. I would deeply like to hang out with. I have fun when I'm with them. Office holders. I have fun when I'm with them. I find them engaging. We have things in common. I could be great friends with them, but I refuse to go down that path. I absolutely refuse. Because then I have divided loyalties. And if I'm going to have to call them out on the air, I don't want to be thinking in the back of my mind, oh, man, am I going to lose a friend? But this is very common to D.C., that they do this. This is why I was calling it all the news that's fit to have sex to get. And it just feeds further into the narrative of the media becoming untrustworthy. I've been meaning to get to this. And this... Sometimes juxtapositions just fly out at you when you're doing show prep. And this just absolutely flew out to me. Two articles. One on the ridiculous trolley car in Seattle. A $200 million project that is now expecting another $146 million. You know the tale of this thing, right? Slower than walking, even uphill. Deadly. It's been broken for most of its life. It has not worked. And yet Jelly Durka's big move, her big, you know, I'm a tough lady, I'm a tough executive move, was to pause the program.
Don't drop that Durka Dirk. Hey, don't drop that Durka Dirk.
Exactly. So Durka didn't drop the program. She paused it. And when it's deadly and it's slower than walking and it's been broken, why would you keep it going? So keep that story in your mind when I give you this. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology and the computer science departments of some other august universities have launched something that's called the Urban Studies Program. And this is taking some of the greatest minds, tech minds, at some of these great schools and bringing them into being not urban planners, but bringing data to bear in decision-making in cities. Do you see where this is going? So these young people paying all this money to go to these colleges, using all of these college loans to go get a degree in urban studies so that they can bring data to the decision-making table. Imagine them bringing the data to the decision-making table of anything like the Seattle City Council, be it Berkeley, be it, the insanity of Austin, Texas. And they come along and say, we have reviewed the data. The trolley car in question is moving on average 8 people at a speed of 3.5 miles per hour, which we've determined is slower than walking, even uphill. The fact is it will never be financially self-sustaining. And it will probably continue to be, given the construction barriers of the tracks, it will continue to kill people. We foresee that it will probably kill a bicyclist once every 3 months. We would suggest in that the data indicate it be shut down. Any engineer in the world who has not had their brain partially sucked out by a Nancy Pelosi-looking zombie from The Walking Dead would make that suggestion. And you don't need to be an MIT genius to do it. Cities don't run on data. They run on pay me. They run on crony capitalism. They run on following the money. The degree they should be getting is in forensic fraud uncoverments. Using data to track the money. Get that going. You want to revolutionize the cities? You want to make the cities more livable places? Study and building algorithms to track the money from the real estate developers who invest in Mass Transit Now and Transportation Choices Coalition, two illegal lobbying groups, and how that ends up in the pockets of Dow Constantine, Smack Daddy Dow, and Heroin Dan Satterberg. And I'm not saying it does end up there. But when I look at the decisions that are being made here, is there anything else that could be said? I mean, imagine it this way. This trolley, $200 million project, they're expecting another $146 million. What is Seattle telling us we can't build? We don't have the money to build. The Magnolia Bridge. You have the money for a trolley car that is slower than walking, even uphill, that is deadly and has been broken for most of its life. You don't have $400 million for a bridge, but you've got almost $400 million for a trolley that is that decrepit and dangerous? You go get all the data degrees you want, kids. You're not going to be steering policy with that because it's not about the data. We'll continue on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. The young, photogenic, very pretty, attractive, did I mention she's good-looking, socialist, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, went on Stephen Colbert's show to explain socialism. For a socialist, well, wait a minute, let me remind you, she's a democratic socialist, so it's okay. She's not very good at explaining her ideology. Bumper music by request. I think we're the only ones who do it. I think I know who that is. Better turn that down, young Tom. I think you better turn that down. It's okay. I'll tell you all later about all the growed up words that are in that are kind of growed up words. The young socialist, who is very pretty and photogenic, looks great on camera, does a good presentation. There's her qualifications, apparently, for office. Oh, I forgot. She's a democratic socialist. I love that label, democratic socialist. So when they decide how much money you get to keep and they decide what equal means and they come about and take your money, and they decide how much food you can have in your pantry at a time and how much gasoline you can have and what doctor you have to go to. They're going to go about it democratically. So don't you fret. They'll be very democratic in how they decide to spend your money and how they decide to control your life. But don't you fret about that. She was on with Stephen Colbert, and she decided to describe socialism to him, or democratic, pardon me, democratic socialism.
Democratic socialism is about, really, the value for me is that I believe that in a modern, moral, and wealthy society, no person in America should be too poor to live. That's what I think.
That seems simple.
Okay, so just as someone who communicates for a living, and you probably spotted this too, at what point does she decide what she's going to pretend to think is her philosophy?
Democratic socialism is about the value.
Okay, so here's what she's doing. She doesn't know, so she's going to reframe the question. Because she's sitting here thinking, I don't actually know what democratic socialism means. So it's about 8 seconds in, she decides to reframe the question.
Democratic socialism is about, the value for me is...
Okay, it's not about anything. So transparent. The value for you is what, Ms. Cortez?
That I believe that in a modern, moral, and wealthy society, no person in America should be too poor to live.
Yeah, it does seem simpleton. Pardon me. I mean, simple. Plus, no bad stuff. I mean, while we're eliminating ills in the world, let's cut to the chase and let's get rid of bad stuff. Oh, and also mean things. Because a lot of times the mean things, it'll come side by side with that bad stuff. And then if you don't look out, then pretty soon you're having stinky days. Look, here's the point. About her not knowing what this means. She doesn't need to know. It doesn't matter that she doesn't know because the people who vote for so-called democratic socialism, they don't know. They don't have any interest in digging into this. They like the feeling. It is the way it's presented in America is a feeling, and it's this feeling that at last things will be fair. That's what it means. At last stuff will be fair and junk won't hurt. That's truly what it is. Junk won't hurt. But if you take as real her haberdashing about into an opinion about it, if you took that for real, let us examine that. So her statement again is that no one should ever be so poor that they too poor to live.
Democratic socialism is about really. The value for me is that I believe that in a modern, moral, and wealthy society, no person in America should be too poor to live. That's what I think.
Okay, so no person should be too poor to live. Okay, I agree that it is a tragedy that people are too poor to live. In America, A, that's very rare. B, that is not addressable easily through government. And this is the piece that drives me crazy about otherwise smart human beings. You look at Western State Hospital, tell me they're going to solve poverty. They can't, in 4 or 5 inspections, they can't have proper fire doors. Did you know that's one of the reasons they lost their $53 million? I'm not kidding. One of the reasons we may not have a place to put these criminally insane people and the poor people there who really need help is because they couldn't get their fire doors together. If you were a theater and the Seattle Fire Department came by once and your fire door was blocked, you may get a fine. They come back again, you're going to get that unblocked because they're going to rain holy heck upon you. They couldn't get that done. They could not stop 25,000 missing master keys from going missing. Master keys, as in you can go anywhere you want within Western State Hospital. They couldn't do that. How on earth did they eradicate poverty? And let's say, okay, well, we'll just make sure everyone has basic monies. Okay, great. Does that increase the cost of anything? When everybody has the basics, everybody has 20 grand a year, 30 grand a year, do businesses have to keep the same cost structure? Or can they say, wow, you know what? We're selling out of those milks. We're sure selling out of a lot of milk now that all that money's been distributed. Well, we're going to have to raise the prices because we're just running out of this stuff too fast. And the suppliers, they're not used to that flow. So they've also had their income impacted because someone's paying for the universal basic income. Someone's doing that. So that milk gets more expensive. The supplier's time gets more expensive. And once again, you're back into a scenario you can't solve. Not with government. Now, if we downsized government, if we made a deal with the American people, think of this. If we made a deal with the American people, we're going to get the government out of all these areas if you will fund these charities. And you pick the charities that are not Clinton Foundation non-charities. You pick actual charities, not things like you'll forgive me if you work for them, but I'm not a big fan of the United Way. If you are going to charities that are demonstrably delivering the aid to the people, okay, that they're demonstrably spending 90%, 95% of their money getting it to the people, then you have a hope of seeing that no one lives in those poverty-like situations. Lastly, on democratic socialism, do you notice what they never bring into this? And don't expect her to do it. She has no idea what she's talking about. She made that up on the spot. She's vamping. She's dancing. She's doing a Buffalo two-step. One of the things they never bring up is the way out. Socialism is the destination. Sustenance living is the aspiration. Just enough to get by. That's the aspiration. And that's why it's soul killing. Because we are not meant to live for sustenance. We are meant to reach. We are meant to challenge. We should value the right to fail because it is in failing that we gain a hunger for success and that we gain trials for things that didn't work. We didn't get the outcome we wanted with that business model. We didn't get the outcome we wanted with this particular invention, and so we need to modify and change. But under this ridiculous, stupid branding of democratic socialism, you forced all that. You prevent it. You do not allow that adaptation, and there's no roadmap out because it is the destination. The redistribution is the destination. The sustenance living is the nirvana. The just enough to get by, that's the natural end. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show, wrap up the week with a personal note.
Down on Main Street. Down on Main Street.
Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. All over the podcast. If you don't get the podcast yet, let's remedy that. Just text us the keyword podcast to 800-465-8770. Brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. We'll get you a link to the podcast. We'll get that whole thing worked out. Hey, on a personal note tonight, I'm really lucky to do the job that I do and have the work that I do and the experiences that I've had. But, you know, I have not really sat back and thought about my time doing manual labor. It's sort of weird to me that I haven't really thought about those times. I mentioned it today when I was guest hosting for Rush about stocking supermarket shelves. I loved that job. That was one of the coolest jobs I ever had. It was really amazing because you were in the supermarket at night, and we were open all night, so people would come in occasionally, but largely it was just us. And we would just fly through the aisles with these carts filled with boxes of groceries and come sliding up on our knees to where the groceries would be installed and whip out our box cutters and just go as fast as possible, having contests, racing one another to stock the shelves. And we couldn't do it sloppily because we had to face the products and make sure that all the labels were in the right place. Or you got major league, you know, get really, really, really docked on points if you didn't make that happen. And we had a lunatic manager. He was a lunatic. His name was Jack. And Jack once cut his throat. Not, he didn't, I mean, thankfully he didn't bleed out. But he was so feverishly cutting open boxes because we had this huge shipment that Jack cut himself near where your aorta would be. he was bleeding through his white work shirt. It was at Tidyman's. Some of you will remember Tidyman's. And I remember looking at Jack thinking, that guy's going to die. He may die. There's something about jobs like that that I don't think if you haven't done them, you can't appreciate. I also did construction. And I started doing construction, working for a guy named, I don't have permission to say the name, but he built basically the town of Des Moines. And his son, I believe, listens to the show. So you know who I'm talking about, D. He through the good graces of my best friend since seventh grade, I got on to go work at the construction places. And what did I do? I dug ditches. Now, out there with a shovel, rain, shine, snow, building apartment buildings, doing the most entry of entry work, which was digging holes in the ground with shovels. Eventually, I got to drive the Bobcat, and that was a real step up. But I always looked at the guys who drove the backhoes, and I always thought, that's the job on a construction site. There was a guy named Henry who worked on one of our construction sites. And he would sit up in his cab and he would dig holes and he'd drink coffee. And I remember he had a really nice backhoe and he was enclosed in glass and it was heated. I mean, it was like that's your Lincoln town car or what's a nice car. That's your Tesla of a backhoe. So he'd sit up there outside the weather and I bet it was air conditioned digging these holes. One day I got this idea and Henry said to me, you're pretty good at driving that Bobcat. And so I said, well, you know, I could probably be a better backhoe driver than you. It probably wouldn't take me that long. He said, what? I said, I'm just saying, I'm pretty good with machines, and I bet I can be a better backhoe driver than you in 2 or 3 weeks. I just have to learn the basics. You think you could beat me? Like, I've been doing this for 15 years, kid. I go, oh, I'm not trying to say you're not great at it. It's just that I'm really gifted this way. Total lie. I'm not gifted mechanically. And Henry looked at me, he goes, it's on. I go, well, I don't even know how to turn it on, so I'd have to get a lesson in the basics. He says, oh, I'll give you a lesson in the basics. There was a secondary backhoe there, and Henry taught me how to drive that secondary backhoe. Taught me how to dig holes and how to work the shovel, etc. And he did a good job of teaching me. And one day we had our contest, and the bet was case of beer. Or what was it? I think it was like 2 cases of beer and chicken. We were next door to a shopping mall or a supermarket that deep fried this horrific chicken. And I don't know why we ate it. So Henry and I had our contest. I knew what was going to happen. He's a skilled guy. He's a skilled laborer. But we dug our trenches side by side. And they're supposed to be of a certain depth. And they're supposed to be of a certain width. And Henry killed me. My trench looked like it was dug by, you know, 15 tons of blind mice. And Henry got out laughing and laughing, and I gave him, I think it was 2 cases of beer and chicken and handed it to him. And then he sat there and he said, you punk. What? I just taught you how to drive a backhoe for beer and chicken. And I had this huge smile on my face because, yep, Henry, you just taught me how to drive a backhoe for beer and chicken. Now, I never got anywhere near what a true, you know, truly skilled man or woman can do with a backhoe. I don't even know if I remember how to drive them, but it got me out of the rain and it got me into this different position at work. And all I could do was dig the basic holes. But it helped me move from the situation where I was using the hand shovel, up into using, you know, a mechanical shovel. Henry and I became friends, and I look back on those days of showing up at that construction site. It's dark, it's miserable, It's rainy, but I'm with other men. And we are dark, or in the dark. We are wet together. We are muddy together. We had our coffee breaks at the same time. We had our lunch breaks at the same time. And shift usually ended pretty much at the same time for everybody. And we had our beers after work together about the same time. And those guys, they went and did their thing. I went and did mine. And I look back at those times and it saddens me that work like that is somehow frowned upon by the elitists in our area. And it is. Manual labor is frowned upon by people who live in the high rises, guys like Henry built. It's frowned upon and it's sneered at. And at the very least, it's not respected. But here's a little bit of revenge for those of us who've done that work. Folks who've never done it will never know the joy of getting muddy and wet and miserable with your buddies. But as you're doing that, you have visible proof every single day of what you built. And to this day, I occasionally would drive my girl, my daughter, by an apartment building before they're torn down. It's been years, and say, I helped build that, hon. I helped build that. This is the Todd Herman Show. We air every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I will see you Monday at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, and be kind.